afternoon. The time is 12:06 and you're tuned to Art Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. If you'd like to join today's conversation, give us a call by calling 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio by my co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And there's a world of powerful art centricity out there this month, as we know. Today, we're spotting some very art-centric superheroes on the horizon. In this first segment, Dave Nelson, president of the League for the Blind and Disabled, is sharing the uplifting story of their annual concert gala. And this year, it's the Blind Boys of Alabama we have the pleasure of hearing. And then in our second half hour, it's local author and arts ambassador Carol Butler in the guest chair discussing her many community-minded, art-centric passions, including her new young adult book, Janice Wilson, Firefighter, She Dared to Be First. But first, because Sarah and I are thoroughly aware of just how much art centricity is on the local radar this weekend, and much of it's colored green, you got to admit, we each have a quick pick art tip for you that might otherwise fly right on by. What's your pick, Sarah?
My pick is something that's going on at the Cinema Center tonight at 6:30 p.m. There is going to be a screening of the film Chasing Ice, and it's a film that explores the debate on climate change and how it polarizes so many different people in America, and it's getting rave reviews. It was at the Sundance Film Festival in 2012. So again, that's at the Cinema Center in downtown Fort Wayne, which is at 437 East Berry Street.
Great pick. I am coloring my world green this weekend, I have to admit. So my pick is, it's a great batch of music for the occasion that's not necessarily first thought of when you think of Irish music, but it's a fantastic Celtic celebration by the Heartland Sings. And there are two concerts, which makes it very, very nice. Friday evening, March 15th, that's tonight at 7, and then a Sunday afternoon at 2:30. There's a nice afternoon concert. These are both held at the Reinhardt Recital Hall at IPFW Reinhardt Music Center, and the tickets are on sale now. You can go to their website, www.heartlandchorale.org, or call for tickets information. Also, we have these information for both of our quick picks on our Facebook page, so we encourage you to find out more there, and certainly a great way to get some delightful St. Patrick's Day and other Celtic music, Heartland Sings.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, and it indeed is our pleasure to welcome Dave Nelson as we do unleash those superpowers that we were speaking of.
Oh, my.
Got your cape on?
Yes.
Dave is the president of the League for the Blind and Disabled. He's joining our forum to share the superpowers of the League's whole mission, but especially your annual concert gala, which this year has headliners the Blind Boys of Alabama. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Julia. We're happy to be here. Happy to be here today.
And what a way to ring in spring on the Heartland.
Well, it is. And we kind of had spring in mind when we brought these folks in. We had been doing some things in February the last few years, and every year it was is this the year of the February storm? So we really were looking at spring and brought in a great group to keep
And, you know, on. Speaking of a super group for a super cause and superheroes, just to further prove what a great event this is going to be, we have one of the Blind Boys of Alabama right on our phone line to talk today. That's Jimmy Carter. Welcome, Jimmy.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, soon we will have you here in the Heartland, and it's your first trip to Fort Wayne, as I understand.
It's been a while. It's been a long time since we've been to Fort Wayne. We're looking forward to it.
Well, we hope that you remember that we do have the heart in the Heartland, and we certainly are ready and waiting and so excited about having you join us for this special concert, all for the League of the Blind and Disabled. And just real quickly, Dave, I would like you to explain what people can expect and why they can expect it.
Happy to do that. And Jimmy, I have not met you, but we're the group bringing you into Fort Wayne, and I really look forward to seeing you and hearing your music. And I came here today so I could talk with you. So.
Okay, buddy, I'm right here with you.
All right, I'll be meeting you on Friday when you get in.
Good. Okay.
We started talking to agent of the Blind Boys about a year ago because certainly the League for the Blind and Disabled, the idea of bringing this world-renowned group, Blind Boys of Alabama,
yes,
to Fort Wayne.
To Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Just was a perfect fit for us. And Jimmy, I've been listening to your music for decades, so it was a good fit for me, too. I was happy to do it.
How many decades?
Oh, about two. I'm not going to claim to listen to him as long as you've been playing.
He's also not going to claim to only be like 30-something either, though he's quite youthful.
No, I'm not going to start lying about that.
Okay, well, yeah, all right, thank you.
So, having such a gala each year, as this is the fourth concert.
That's correct.
That you'll be presenting, and what a labor of love all the way around. It's ending with, we can say the backwards way, with the Blind Boys of Alabama, and what a concert that's going to be. But this is a whole year of planning to orchestrate something like this and to be able to share it with the Fort Wayne community.
It is. And, you know, we started talking with the agent for the Blind Boys probably last January or February with the idea that we wanted to be able to approach sponsors in the summer, and everything fell together in April, and we were ready for the summer. So we've been working hard on this for a year. It's our first year in the embassy, where we're
another
really
celebration.
Excited.
Yes, oh, yeah. Jimmy, when the Blind Boys of Alabama come to town, we roll out the red carpet at one of our finest and very historic concert houses, which is the historic embassy. I'm sure you've played in a lot of them, and
we played in big ones, small ones, but we don't care about the dimensions and all that stuff. We just love to sing gospel music and make people feel good. That's what we're about.
Make a joyful noise. And speaking of that,
that's right.
Jimmy, tell us a little bit about the background of the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Well, you know, the Blind Boys of Alabama, we are a traditional gospel group. But now, having said that, we can sing traditional gospel, contemporary, any kind of gospel you want. The Blind Boys can do it. We are fortunate to be able to sing to anybody, you know.
Oh, but, indeed, yes. I too am a fan of your music, and yes, you. There's no sub-genre left
nope,
behind.
Nope.
And your equal opportunity for all. We like that. And also, speaking of all the superheroes, because of the kindness of many folks to get you here and to get all of this happening and being realized for the League of the Blind and Disabled here in Fort Wayne, we have two pairs of tickets to give away, and Sarah will tell us exactly how that works.
Sure. So all you have to do is call in at 260-452-1185, and you can leave your first and last name with us, and a pair of tickets will be waiting for you for the show, which is March 23rd on Saturday. And those will be available for you at the embassy at will call. All you have to do is call in, and we only have two pairs of tickets. So call in now.
Real quickly, please call in now. This is...
You better call now. That's right.
That's right. You can't. I mean, you can trust in the Lord to help you, but you'd better call in if you want one of these two pairs of tickets. And this is WBOI's Midday Matters. It's very art-centric today, and it's very super powerful because we are discussing the League for the Blind and Disabled's upcoming gala concert and features the Blind Boys of Alabama, which is some very special, as Dave mentioned, world acclaimed and renowned and beloved music that we'll be hearing. Back to you, Jimmy, and a question. How long have you been part of the Blind Boys of Alabama?
I am a original one.
All righty then. And and so there are six of you presently?
Well, I'm the only active original one.
Right, that was my end. Yeah. So I was going to ask how these young'uns are doing then with you.
Well, yeah.
Are they keeping up?
They're keeping up. You know, I'm a stickler for promptness, for punctuality, but you got to sing too, you know.
And performance, yes.
You can't get in here.
We're glad that we like your priorities, and we certainly know it works. How long would you say, how much of the year are you touring? Let's put it that way.
Well, it varies, but on an average, we tour from 150 to 200 days out of the year.
Wow. My goodness, wow. That must be what keeps you young.
That's right. Yeah, people ask me, say, you've been doing this so long, what keeps you going? I said, well, I love what I do, you know, and when you love what you do, that keeps you motivated.
Indeed, you have to feed off of the best wish. Well, of course, your fan base, which is phenomenal. But then the best wishes when you are touring of the people whose lives you touch. And let's talk a little bit about that. What does your, how do you think your singing impacts your audience?
Well, I would hope that it will see, like I say, we are a gospel group. We are Christian people. We're not perfect, but we're Christian people.
Mm-hmm.
We tell the world about Jesus Christ, how he died that we might live. And, you know, we let people know that no matter how far you have sunk, God can pick you up and he can elevate you to another level, and, you know, you can be as good as new. That is our message. That's what we sing about. And we'll never deviate from that, you know. So that's what the plan was. That's what we are.
And thank you for being that. And I certainly hope you never deviate, and because it is a powerful message.
And if we can just mention really quickly, the tickets that we had are gone. So if you'd
like, they're gone
pretty quick.
If you'd like to call in with a question or comment, you can give us a call at 260-452-1185, or post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm. But the tickets are officially gone.
And Sarah really, and yeah, praise the Lord, huh? Sarah made a really good point, because folks are going to get to enjoy and listen to this music. A lot of people that are listening to our Midday Matters show right now are quite familiar with the Blind Boys of Alabama and their music, and certainly some of you are not. And if you do have a question or a comment or just a chance to talk to one of the most charming as well as talented musicians that we've had by phone in the studio, now would be your chance to do that. You can call 260-452-1185 or post right on our Facebook page, which is Midday Matters, a Facebook page on Facebook, or you can also look at the information for the concert there. In the meantime, let's go back to just a second, Dave. Something like this, you can't do all by yourself. You are a superhero, but for the work that you do, but well, I have been told, yes, representing the league, and that's really quite something. But you don't do this alone. You have a lot of sponsors for this event, and again, we like to name drop, so please be free to do that. But why do you think that this is something that does get such support, that is so successful, both from your sponsors and from the ticket buyers?
Well, we've been doing events like this for the last 4 years. This is our fourth year. This is the largest we've done, but everything we've done has had great support from the community. We've done a lot of blues last few years. But the league has been around for 60 years, and I think this community, whether it's the league or any other of our great organizations, this community gets behind organizations that help people. This is real unique. I've lived a lot of places, and you don't see this all the time. So I think part of our success is we're just in a great community, and people get behind this stuff. They get behind a good cause. So.
And now is their chance, of course, this year. And what a great way to do it. The Blind Boys of Alabama are so very well known, and their music is legend. We're going to hear a little bit of it in just a bit. Then while we have Jimmy on the line, I'd like to ask, Jimmy, if you've got the senior position in the Blind Boys of Alabama roster. I know you've traveled a lot and you've met wonderful people, had wonderful experiences, but can you share a particular favorite or funny one with us?
Well, I don't know about, you know, when you ask stuff like that, you have to really think about it, you know. It has to come to you, so I probably wouldn't have time to really think of
That's just let it flow. Let's put it to you that way. And in the meantime, I'll ask something I know that you can answer. As you say, you're the senior member of six very talented and wonderful singers, and together you have a sound, and you cover every base of the most fantastic gospel music in the world, to be sure. Tell us a little bit about how you guys, of course, you come together, but how much practice does this take? I know you do a lot of gigs too, but what are you doing when you're not on the road?
Well, you know, we've been together so long.
Mm-hmm.
we know how each other thinks.
Okay.
We don't have to practice. The only time we really rehearse is when we have to do, you know, something special, like a recording session. Do something, an occasion like a benefit or something like that, and they want special songs, so we have to rehearse for that. But just to do a main show, we don't need to rehearse, because we have a set routine. Sometimes the set routine changes, but most of the time the set routine stays the same. And so we know it, and we've been through it 1,000 times, so we don't have to rehearse.
I suppose if you're on the road and performing 200 days out of the year, I would guess a performance becomes a practice, or at least a continuation of getting your...
It becomes a rehearsal also, yeah.
You do spend time in the studio and have some wonderful recordings, but then you also do so well on the road and with your fan base. Of course, it makes you. It's got to propel you through a show, because of the listeners are going crazy. How do you maintain such a excitement when you're putting together an album?
When you go in the studio, for example, now, you know, the Blind Boys did a country gospel CD about a year and a half ago.
Nicely done.
The High Road, great album.
Yes, in fact, we'll be playing a piece from that a little later. Yes, and so how did you mentally prepare for that?
That was the first record of this kind that the Blind Boys ever done. Me, myself, I am a country music fan. I love country music. So when we got a chance to do this, I was really gratified. So I got a chance to meet a lot of my country heroes on this record. We had people like Hank Williams Jr. on here. We had Willie Nelson on here. We had the Oak Ridge Boys. We had Jamie Johnson. We had Leanne Womack. And so I had a chance to meet all of these people, you know.
That had to be, quite an experience, and then to get to sing with them.
I was in heaven.
Jimmy, I want you to know, in our office, internally the mantra is "Take the High Road." We're high roaders, and when I saw your last album come out and it was called "Take the High Road," I knew you were the right guys to bring in. It was a good match for us.
All right, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. It's a great album, too, by the way.
It is. It's awesome. And, I think one thing everybody would want to know, what about that Willie Nelson? Is he fun to perform with?
Willie Nelson, he's one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. He really is. I had a chance to meet him at length, and he's a very nice gentleman. As a matter of fact, all of the guys that we had a chance to meet, they are very nice. You know, Vince Gill was nice. All these guys are very, very, very nice people.
There has to be some reciprocity between, of course, they're your heroes, but I would suspect that you and your music are their heroes as well, so what a match. Made in heaven, of course, again.
I found out that they loved do this with us. They have been fans of ours for years. We didn't know that, but we were glad to find it out. So we didn't have no trouble at all making the record. You know, everybody was just like a family. It was a great experience for me.
Jimmy, what about the movie Hop? You guys did an appearance in that, and I think you shared a scene with an animated rabbit or something in that movie.
Yeah, right. I was a rabbit wanted to steal my drummer.
Uh-oh. Well, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he
took
did,
over
well,
for
he
a
did,
while.
He did for a minute. Yeah. Yeah, that was a great experience too.
Now, have you been in other movies, or was that your first?
No, we were in a movie called Fighting Temptations. You might need to look that movie up. It's pretty good.
I intend to.
And we also was in a movie called Brother Bear. It was like a cartoon animated movie.
Oh, so that wasn't your first time playing with animated characters then? So in Hop?
No.
Okay, good.
But you do share your signature sound in these movies, which I definitely am going to look up, by the way.
Yes, we do, yeah.
And I would like to point out, you know, a lot of your stuff, you know, the gospel stuff is near and dear to me, but you guys have such a wide range of music that you do. To try and just pigeonhole you into one area is just not right. You guys are very...
We are trying to involve more young people in our music, you know. So that's why we collaborate with people like Ben Harper,
yes,
Aaron Neville, and all those kind of people. They relate to young people, and that's what we are trying to do. So since we have become involved with those people, we have more young people that, you know, that attend our shows now.
That's totally fantastic to take it to another generation. Yes.
So would you be willing to tell Ben Harper that when I call, he should talk to me?
I should. Okay. I'll tell him. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
And we thank you for, maybe you knew it and maybe you didn't, but you gave us some of your very favorite anecdotes and shares, and so thank you for that, Jimmy. And
thank you.
Otherwise, you have safe travels and happy trails, and I know you're going to be joining us we're welcoming spring right here on March 23rd and welcoming the Blind Boys of Alabama as well. I'm going to let Dave give a real quick rundown of everything, and also before I say goodbye and thank you so very much, Jimmy, you stand by us and we're saying stand by me, and we're going to go out of this hour with a little bit of that, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy. I look forward to meeting you next week.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. And we hope that people will remember to get their tickets now. We gave a couple of pair of tickets away today.
Glad to do that.
But they're available either at the Embassy box office at 424-5665 or Ticketmaster, which is ticketmaster.com, or 800-745-3000. But the Embassy box office or Ticketmaster, we're having a party a week from Saturday, and we'd love to have everybody out for it.
Time to take a quick break, but are we going to play ourselves out with some Alabama
Blind
Boys?
We stand by me.
Okay, all right. Here's a little bit of that, and then we're going to head over to the news with Sean Beter. This is 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne.
Life raging, stand by me.
Stand by me.
When the storm, life raging, stand by me. When the world is tossing me like a ship out on the sea, now who knoweth all about it? Stand by me.
Stand by me. Oh Lord, won't you stand by me?
Every day,
every day. afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOY News. The State Ethics Commission has advised Indiana's top business recruitment official to separate himself from any decisions related to tax credits that could benefit a company he co-owns. The commission told Indiana Economic Development Corporation President Eric Doden on Thursday that a wall of separation is needed to safeguard him against any conflict of interest accusations. Doden had sought an advisory opinion. The Journal-Gazette reported today that Doden is on leave from a company he co-owns that's a minority partner in a development firm that might bid on a project in Fort Wayne. If Fort Wayne expands a revitalization district adjacent to that property and Doden's company wins a contract, it would be eligible for a state tax credit that would have to be approved by the IEDC. Democratic lawmakers say they're concerned the legislature is going to be left out of decisions made about Indiana's health insurance choices. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, House and Senate minority leaders sent a letter to the governor Thursday asking if a special session might be necessary.
The state wants to continue using the Healthy Indiana Plan, or HIP, as its health insurance program for low-income Hoosiers not covered by Medicaid. The program is set to expire at the end of the year. Indiana sent an extension request to the federal government last month, but has not yet conducted public hearings on the issue, which the federal government requires. A spokesperson for Governor Mike Pence says the state knew its request was incomplete, but wanted to get the process started. But now, House and Senate Democrats say they're worried by the time the whole process is complete, the General Assembly will be done for the year. Speaker Brian Bosma says if the federal government turns down the state's request to use HIP, the state won't need to act right away.
The governor's opted out of the Medicaid expansion model, and we'll have another year to look at it and see what's happening in other states.
House Minority Leader Scott Pilath says the state can't afford to wait.
The people of Indiana need clarity and certainty on this matter. They need to know what the future is going to be.
In a response to the minority leader's letter, Pence blamed the federal government's bureaucratic process for the delay in receiving an answer on HIP. If the state does not receive an answer by June, it will begin dismantling the health insurance program, with Hoosiers currently using it forced to find other coverage options. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Indiana University's president says he's encouraged that the state budget proposal would boost higher education funding after years of cuts during the recession. IU President Michael McRobbie and other state university leaders testified Thursday before the Senate Appropriations Committee that's now considering the new state spending plan. The version approved last month by the House increases university funding by 3.5%, up from the 1% hike proposed by Governor Mike Pence. McRobbie says he's pleased with the support so far from legislators after more than $150 million in state cuts to universities in recent years. You're listening to Midday Matters Art-Centric here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. The time is 12:35. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon by my co-host, Julia Meek.
We are taking a slightly different turn, but I can assure you, Sarah, it's superheroes we continue to track on this edition of Midday Matters Art-Centric. Our next guest is a local shero to many Fortlanders, but she's accomplished a dream about her own local shero with a brand new young adult book called Janois Wilson, Firefighter, She Dared to Be First. You've got a lot of firsts to talk about today, Carol, and welcome to Midday Matters.
Thank you, Julia. I'm so happy to be here.
We are always delighted to have you. You're always up to something wonderfully art-centric, and we'll maybe walk a little backwards path that way, too. But in the meantime, this is a long-time dream of yours come true.
Yes.
And truly one of your local sheroes, Janois Wilson. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Janois and why, how she touched your heart and why you chose to honor her in this way?
Janois and I grew up in the same neighborhood when we were coming up through high school, but she was a youngster and I didn't, you know, so we weren't really hanging out so much, but she and I were in the same neighborhood. So we always knew each other. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Fort Wayne, she was working for the fire department, and she and we all had mutual friends in common. Skip forward maybe 20 some years, and my husband had done a favor for Genoa's. He had created a website for a project that she was doing. And to thank us, she took us out to breakfast at Link's. And I started to ask her, I told her a story about what had happened to me. I had recently signed up as a veteran to receive my VA benefits at the VA hospital. And one day I was over there and a woman came up to me. And I didn't know her. And she said, "You came to my classroom when I was in the eighth grade at Memorial Park, and you were dressed in your uniform. And I just want to tell you that you changed my life. I decided right then to have a military career." And I went, "Really? Are you serious?" It was like something out of a movie. I couldn't believe that she had said that to me. But mm-hmm. I do remember as we were leaving boot camp in Maryland, they encouraged us, go to your, I know what they were doing now. They were trying to recruit more people, but I was obedient.
Spreading the word. Yes.
I was obedient.
That might be where you learned networking. So yes. Maybe. And you had already learned obedience. So yes.
So anyway, I was obedient. I went to the schools and they also said, wear your uniform and go downtown and be seen. And I did that. Anyway, this woman had done more than I had done. Her name is Joan Bolden, and she is an employee at the VA Medical Center right now. And she had gone into, she served in the Air Force and the Army, had a long career there, and it just blew me away. Okay, so back to the breakfast at Link's, and I was thinking about what I had gone through in boot camp. It wasn't anything like it was. That it is now, I'm mm-hmm. sure. We never.
In the, what I was what in the, time were you in the service, Carol?
I was in the service from 1968 when things were really roaring and people
Indeed.
Were, men were going to Vietnam heavily. I mean, it was really the height of Vietnam era. Anyway, I served for about 2 years. And during that time, you could not, you could be married, but you couldn't have a family. Things are different now. And anyway, I married and started my family. But I was thinking about what I had gone through, thinking the first week or so in boot camp going, oh my gosh, I'm in the Navy. I'm in boot camp. What am I doing here? How did this happen? And then coming around to, okay, it's happened. I did sign on the bottom line and say that I was going to do this. And I'm going to stay and get my blues, which was my uniform. Mm-hmm. And I did that. But it was hard. It wasn't easy. And we were talking about, I asked Genoa's that morning about her career. And realizing that she was the first person, and I said, I just looked at her, and I said, was that hard? And she said, yes, it was. And I could relate. I could relate on just so down deep. And I said, you know, because of what Joan had said to me and all of these other young women and girls and boys, we need to write your story. And that's how it started.
You make it sound mighty simple, and I know it's been satisfying. I know it's been a labor of love, and here's a question based on your explanation, which is wonderful, life changing circumstances or happenstances. They come, they're there, and you take them and run with them. Obviously, so as to write a book mm-hmm. on Genoa's.
Right.
Okay, so you have the inspiration and then enacting it. What does that, what did that entail? And as we talk about that just a little bit, because I know it's a happy and interesting story, you can tell us a little bit of Genoa's story as well, because she paralleled your late 60s stint in the Navy when times were very, very different and the Vietnam era was
right.
certainly different. And what time did she think to join the fire
right.
department?
She had... I learned from interviewing her that she had a similar it wasn't a direct line or direct path. First thing was, early when Janois was a toddler, there had been a fire at her home. They lived in Arkansas out in the country. And as a result of that fire, the smoke inhalation or whatever it was, her older sister passed away as a result of that fire. So that was in her psyche mm-hmm. all this time. She wanted to be a teacher. She went to school. She went to do student teaching, an assignment, and she thought, I don't know that this is really what I want to do. But she persisted. And then eventually she found another job. I don't know if she was still in school or what. I'm not real clear on that. But she found another job, and she worked for the city and the fire department as a dispatcher. And this wonderful man, I will say, Chief Thomas Lorraine, he was very visionary and realized that now is the time. Janois is listed in the Women's Firefighter Association as one of the first women firefighters in the United States, not just in Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. She is a trailblazer. So anyway, Mr. Lorraine, Chief Lorraine, thought, okay, Fort Wayne can step out. She was working for the fire department or city or whatever, but she was a firefighter. She was on the payroll of the fire department, although she worked as a dispatcher. He came to her one day and he said, how would you like to make history? And she said, yes. And from there, she went into the academy to train as a firefighter. So she had worked for the fire department before. And all of a sudden, you know, she was considered the first woman firefighter in Fort Wayne City, and that happened in 1975, I believe.
And what a visionary, well, all the way around, and especially mm-hmm. the fire chief at that time that had right. had such plans. I'd like to remind our listeners that this is WBOI's Midday Matters, a very art-centric edition. We are speaking with Carol Butler about her own art centricities, which include a children's book for on Janois Wilson, yeah. excuse me, firefighter. She dared to be the first. Mm-hmm. And quite a tale it is now on your path,
yes.
which people who know you or know of you know that you... you're a go-getter and you don't take no for an answer. So once you decided to write such a book or attempt to be on a quest to write such a book, then you knew it needed to be illustrated.
Yes, I did. And I had no idea how to begin that process. And I will say that it seems to me, without being too melodramatic or whatever, but I just kind of think about things, and I just, in those hours before waking, when I'm almost awake, a lot of times I'm inspired. And one morning I thought, oh, the perfect person to illustrate this book is Teresa Yarbrough. And then my thoughts went on to say, and the reason why is because not only is she a beautiful artist and has not gotten a lot of credit for her artwork because she's doing a lot of different things mm-hmm. and not really focused all the time on her artwork, but Teresa, we call her Shelley, Teresa is the daughter of the first African-American firefighter in Fort Wayne, and her entire family, not her entire family, but her family, the Ridley family, is very much represented in the Fort Wayne Fire Department. Her Uncle James was the union president. Both of her brothers served as firefighters. So she was perfect.
Another serendipitous partnering.
Right.
And you always make it sound so easy. And I like the idea of you sharing your pre-waking
inspirations. I do. I believe a lot of things come that way. And
begin that way, but then, and you are blessed, mm-hmm. but then hard work is what it takes to
you
get
have
the
to
job carried
you have
out.
To, right. You have to get on with it.
And so how long from the time all of this did formulate and naturally transpire, or divinely transpire, however we want to look at it, how long were you working on the book before it was published?
I didn't really know. It seemed like a long time. And I did find out that we had, we met with Genois, I believe it was right after March 18th, which is 2010. So it's been 3 years, okay. And the book was published on February 21st or something. I wanted it to be published on February 20th. I wanted everything to happen on that day so that it would be ready for National Women's History Month. That was important to me. Mm-hmm. But the date of February 20th, I wanted to honor my sweet husband, Tom, who is my partner in life and everything. Greatest supporter.
To your super shiro-dom, I would say that he's a superhero in supporting worthy causes,
right,
and
right.
supporting spreading the word, mm-hmm, on worthy causes as well. And speaking of Women's History Month, and that's something that's near and dear to Sarah and myself and certainly all of our listeners, that is something that it precedes your whole, one of your whole missions and of your many art centricities, is the your involvement with the International Women's Day, and that's that's earlier in March. But again, another happy and just one of those divinely inspired things. I know that you will say that you thought something should be done about it here in the city, and so you did. But talk a little bit about that. Tell us how that
I want
happened.
To say that with International Women's Day, one of the principles that I live by is the equality of women and men. It's very, very right up there. And I know that there have been different things happening in our community, and I understand that there were other International Women's Day celebrations prior to the one that we started. And I will also say that everything worth doing, to me, is needs to have diversity of in all manner, religion, age, color, size, women, men, involvement, and everything that I have been involved with, including this book, has been a project with my girlfriends and my boyfriends, you know. People coming together because we do want to do something together. And the International Women's Day celebration began, I believe it was in 2005. It went on for 7 years, mm-hmm, and it got bigger and bigger, and more people wanted to be involved. And we never spent any money on ourselves. We raised money like crazy to have the event, and we always wanted it to be free to everyone. And then it was just wonderful. And in 2011, my husband retired. And I remember February of, I think it was 2010, Tom's had an assignment in Orlando, Florida. And we never saw anything in Orlando, Florida. We were there for about a week, had a beautiful hotel suite in a resort area. And we really, almost 18 hours, we spent working on International Women's Day. So, and one day, like at the, just before we were ready to come back, he was doing his work, of course, but he was also working on, with me, with International Women's Day, you know. And one day before we left, I went, we need to get out of this hotel room. We're in Orlando. Let's do something. And we hadn't done anything except work on International Women's Day. It was a huge success that year. And when he was thinking about retirement, we broke the news to our wonderful committee, which you were a part of, Julia Meek. You were there from way back. I remember the first time I met you and Bonnie Blackburn came. And I didn't know you, and you came up to me, both of you, and said how wonderful. We were at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. Charles Shepard said, yes, you can use our museum. He was just wonderful. And I thought, oh, I couldn't get over the fact that here you were standing in front of me, and I knew your voice. And it was like, here's a face attached to this voice. So it was lovely. And it was always, you know, other people besides me involved. I'm thankful for that.
You seem to you're a catalyst. You're a creator and a go-getter, but a catalyst, and that's so very important. Again, I'd like to remind our listeners that this is WBOI's Midday Matters, very art-centric edition. Sarah and I are enjoying right now having Carol Butler in the studio with us, and you actually gave me a perfect segue. And I would also mention to all of our listeners, if you have a question or a comment or some great memory of art-centric contact with Carol Butler, give us a call, 452-1185, or leave a message on our Facebook page. But the segue would be Charles Shepard, because I know that you have touched his life and he yours, but fast-forwarding right into our very studios, because we discussed this on a Midday Matters not so long ago. You gave Charles Shepard a call, and he says that he's had so many good suggestions for so many good art exhibits, but probably none ever called in from the field by a member and a supporter that said, I am looking at the best and most important exhibit I ever saw, and we need to get this at our museum. Yes. And tell us a little bit about that.
That was just so cool. Tom and I, since he's retired, we spend a good bit of time traveling. And we have gone to all of the NASA museums and the caves, whatever. We like to do things like that. And we wanted to go along I-10 this past year, take a journey across I-10, which goes through Montgomery, Alabama. We went there and we met with... we saw a lot of things, but we also went to the Rosa Parks Museum, and they were having an exhibit up. We couldn't take pictures. Most of the time, Tom can take pictures. We could not take pictures that time, but it was so powerful. I had never, ever seen anything like it before. These huge pictures, paintings, done in three or four colors, like a teal color, white, black, and something called like a rust or something. Mm-hmm. And they were picture paintings that Charlotta Jansen had done of the mugshots of the freedom riders, those people who had gone down through the South, gotten on the buses, risked their lives. And I picked up there was a little, maybe like a 3x5 card on the registration desk that had the curator's name. And I made sure just to take the card, or the paper it was. And so when I got home, I sent an email to several people. And one of them was Amanda Martin, who is the administration vice president, I believe, or director at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. Told her about it, and I said, this was like to a lot of people, is there any way that we can have this exhibit? I have no idea how this works. I have no idea how much it costs, but and here is a link to Charlotta Jansen's homepage, and there's even a video of her working. And then I heard later, I received an email back, but Amanda told me that within 1 hour, they had already talked to Charlotta, and it was a done deal. They had organized it for Fort Wayne. So
it seems that so many serendipitous things follow you around, and they just all seem so easy and so flowing. You make them sound that way, and of course they're not. And that's that's another great story of things that you share, your own art centricities as they happen to you and occur within your life. Is it natural that you think in terms of how and whom you could share these things with, how best to share them?
Oh, yes. The reason why I wrote the book was for, a lot of times we say that the older generation might be too far gone. But
are we part of that older generation?
No, no, no. Okay. Not always. But it's a lot easier to put an idea of positive things to a child or to a younger person. And I know that I will say that there are a lot of people like me who are, you know, striving to do the same thing. But I don't know what it is. I just feel like I can, and I do try to be audacious. And what's your only thing that you can receive is, no, you can't do that. Okay, so I made my plea. And I just feel like you should ask for what you want in life and dream. And a lot of people say, well, you know, that was really, really wonderful. Like the ending day at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. I convinced Condra Ridley, my friend, to come. We had a singing at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, and we had Charlotta there on Skype. It was so wonderful to see little girls, mothers, grandmothers coming with their granddaughters up to the computer to meet Charlotta. And here she was, holding her hands up on the screen as if she were holding hands with all of us. We were holding hands in the museum. She's in New York. And we're singing, We Shall Overcome. I mean, how cool is that?
What a glorious celebration. Right. And the glorious celebration follows you around. I think that's a special part
so
of your blessings.
Oh, you're so sweet,
Julia. We have just about 2 minutes left in today's show. Can you give the information for how people can get a hold of your book?
Oh, yes. Go to our website for the book. It's called www.carol-butler.com. On that site, you will receive, if you order a book, each book will be autographed by not only myself as the author, but Janois Wilson and Teresa Yarbrough. And the books are discounted as well. They can be found on the publisher's website, but these books are discounted and autographed, and you can use your credit card, PayPal, or any of that.
We have provided that link on our Facebook page.
Carol, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Sarah.
Support for Midday Matters on WBOY is provided by Advisa, helping businesses of all sizes improve hiring, leadership, strategy, sales through data analysis and personalized services. More information at advisausa.com. And support is also provided by the Landmark Conference and Reception Center, featuring the Landmark Gardens with a pergola and waterfall for weddings, outdoor picnics, class reunions, and more. Details at thelandmarkcenter.com. You are listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Mad Rothschild Studios at 89.1 and HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.